Hello.
My name's Oshin.
My name is Dennis.
And we're Windmill Slam.
And we are recording another episode of Between Rounds.
Between Rounds is our new venture that we're going for on the channel, and hopefully on some other sources soon.
I'll get to
that.
We'll
sort that out. But basically,
it is a casual Magic podcast where we talk about things that are loosely tied to the game of Magic the Gathering.
And also just stuff that's going on.
Between rounds of Magic Online.
Exactly, because we spend a lot of time waiting for rounds to start when we record these videos, and we figured we might as well do something productive with the time.
Instead of actually talking to each other like normal human beings.
Exactly. We're now talking to each other, but we're just letting some number of people listen in.
Dozens of people.
Yeah. I think it got up to the hundreds mark.
That's true. What did you do this week?
This week?
Magic or otherwise?
Yeah, no, I think it's mostly otherwise.
Fair.
Unfortunately, it would be nice to be able to say, I've been playing a lot of Magic, and here's all these things I can talk about related to Magic, but no, I've been studying. I've got exams, too.
I have not played Magic since I filmed the video last week with Ian. Mm-hmm. And that's a sad thing.
Yeah.
Because normally, I would play, honestly, 3 to 4 drafts a day.
3 to 4 drafts a day.
Yeah, really? I draft a lot,
because that's like 6 to 8 hours of Magic a day.
That's only if you do them one at a time. Are you crazy?
Oh, you're a multi-queuer.
The most I've ever done is I've quad queued.
That's
and I wouldn't advise
dangerous.
It, but and the only, the limiting factor there was my computer. It was not my brain.
Really,
I didn't win. So it might have been my brain,
probably.
But because I play quite quickly, so you get stuff out of the way. It's not a huge deal.
I've been playing a fair bit of Hearthstone. We talked about that last week.
Yeah,
last time.
People were excited. People said, hey, would you guys going to film Hearthstone videos?
Dennis doesn't play Hearthstone. Dennis thinks it's too simple for him. It doesn't challenge his brain enough.
In my quad-queuing brain.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's too... I do think it's too simple, but I don't find it engaging in the same way.
That's fair. I do. But again, probably not in the same way. Like, if I'm sitting down to play Magic, I think we had this conversation last time, if I'm sitting down to play Magic, I'm thinking about it quite hard.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm playing some Hearthstone, it's because I'm chilling out and I want to play some Hearthstone.
That's fair. Like, I don't want to say it's too simple, because I like poker a lot.
Yeah.
And poker, I think, is probably simpler.
In terms of game mechanics, yeah.
Sure. But I just can't get into... I can't get emotionally committed to Hearthstone.
That's fair enough.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, she's a lovely girl, and I like spending time with her, but I'm not in the place where I'm looking to get into that kind of relationship.
Sure. Okay. And also Hearthstone.
So you said, you told me before we started recording that you've been playing a lot of Commander.
Yeah, that's kind of my main interaction with Magic at the moment, because I got a bunch of friends in college who play Commander.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of fun.
Who's your Commander?
My Commander... See, I had a little bit of a mishap.
Oh, no.
I had a pretty sweet Omnath Locus of Mana deck.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was a pretty good deck. And he's gone walkabouts. He's returned to the wild.
You lost it?
Yeah.
You lost the deck.
I lost the deck. I have literally no idea where it's gone. If anyone is in the greater Dublin area and stumbles across an Omnath deck and, you know, thinks, I wonder who this belongs to, it might be me. But I have thrown together an Azami deck, Azami Lady of Scrolls. The theme of the deck is blue cards I had.
I like it. It's solid.
Blue cards that were in my house. And it's a pretty cool deck. I have a lot of fun with it.
I similarly revived my Brago deck.
Yeah.
Because I sold it off shortly after we filmed that video. But I wanted to have something that I could play for, you know, 20 minutes.
Yeah,
so I built it back up, made some slight changes, some new additions, and the deck cost maybe 55 tickets.
Okay.
19 of those are Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Jace the Mind Sculptor is only 19 tickets?
I think it's going to be 18 tickets, something like that.
Lads.
Who plays it?
I don't know. Legacy and Vintage are still
fledgling on
Magic Online.
Yeah. But that's a lot of fun.
Mm.
And I like that a lot. But I'm looking for a new commander, I think. Brago's run its course for me.
Really?
I don't have that emotional attachment that people do to their commander decks.
That's fair enough.
Maybe it's because mine doesn't physically exist.
That's possible, yeah.
You know, and I didn't spend, like, weeks trading for the cards and stuff, but I don't, like, I just made it
my wishes. Do you enjoy the play style and are looking to just change up the commander, or are you looking for something entirely different?
See, I'm looking for something entirely different, but I don't want to engage with my opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Commander a lot of the time feels to me like you're playing two separate games of solitaire, and whoever plays better wins.
Sure.
And that seems to happen a lot whenever I play Paper Commander and I borrow someone's deck, like someone's Riku deck or whatever. It's like, oh, I'm drawing a bunch of cards, I'm playing a bunch of dudes, stuff's happening, you're also doing that, but oh, I played more dudes than you, so I won.
Sure.
You don't seem to actually...
I just play tons of counterspells, it's a ton of fun in my...
Yeah. Okay, well,
just blue cards.
I mean, I've got counterspell and forbid in my Brago deck, so I can't really complain. But, I don't know, if anyone has a suggestion for a commander, do let me know.
Yeah, that would be a good... thing to put in the comments.
That's what those are for.
On this video.
That's what those are for.
Suggest a commander for Dennis.
And I promise you, I will probably read the comment. As far as I'm willing to go.
Fair enough.
So, over the last while, over the last really year and a half or so, Chinese fake cards have been cropping up on Reddit a lot about how good and how convincing they're becoming.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're almost as good and convincing as that segue.
Well, I'll just edit in a segue.
Sure, yeah. No, we have a little list of things we want to talk about. Not to spoil the magic, but we've got a little Word document open with just a few little topics.
Five.
We tried to transition into them naturally, but it just doesn't happen. We just have to... Yeah, so now we're talking about Chinese fake cards.
So that doesn't happen, but what did happen was these fake cards where these Chinese dudes... I think they're the Chinese guys. I hope they are, if I'm not just racist.
As far as I know, most of the fake cards were coming out of China.
But they're these guys that are printing fake magic cards, and they're usually like high-value reserve list ones, like Moxon and like, you know,
the Dual Lands. Dual Lands have been a big one that's been
and like, you know, Jace the Mind Sculptors and stuff.
Sure.
And apparently now they're approaching indistinguishable.
It's kind of funny, because every time... What happened for the last year was a batch of these cards would come out.
Right.
And be distributed. And someone, like several people, would take... the batch of fake cards and compare them to real cards and point out all the inconsistencies so that you could avoid these fake cards. Mm-hmm. But what was happening then was the people who were making the cards were going, oh, those are the inconsistencies, let's fix that.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's kind of the nature of the beast. Yeah. You are in a very awkward position when it comes to these.
I think intellectual property is a weird thing to begin mm-hmm. with and quite hard to define. Like, when I test standard decks and modern decks and constructed decks of all shapes and sizes, I would tend to test them on a program called, am I allowed to say this,
Cockatrice? It rhymes with Smock, okay.
Yeah, I've said it now. You can edit it out. It does rhyme with Smock Address. And it's a piece of software. It's similar to Magic Online, but it doesn't know the rules, mm-hmm. and you can put decks together with any cards.
And it's a good tool.
It is.
People, people use X-Mage and stuff and like tabletop
simulators. X-Mage does know the rules, but it's more awkward to use.
My favorite thing about Cockatrice was when you and I used to play on it, and I would text you, just text that said cock later tonight. And you'd say, sure, see you at 10.
Yeah.
And we'd go online and play over Skype.
Play Cockatrice over Skype, yeah.
But I don't use it at all anymore.
Okay.
It's been completely replaced with Magic Online, which is, I'm sure, what Wizard wants to hear.
Yes. Well I still use it for testing. You don't play Constructed. So,
sure.
But, like, if I was going to test the standard deck, Cockatrice would be how I'd do it.
So you think people should be allowed to print fake cards for proxies for testing? Is that a fair statement?
I mean, I don't see the difference between using a professionally printed fake magic card in a proxied deck, mm-hmm. as long as everyone is acknowledging that it is a proxy.
That last one is the problem.
Exactly. Because where the issues lie, like, if people want to, like, sit around with their friends playing Commander and put their dual lands into their Commander deck, but not pay 300 quid for them.
And they want to write Scrubland on a swamp.
If they want to write Scrubland on a swamp with a Sharpie, or if they want to buy a professionally printed Scrubland that says this is a proxy on it.
There are ones, I think, that say on the back of the card. They say, like, this card cannot be used to turn and play or whatever. And that's kind of okay, but, like, these are printed with the intent to deceive and to sell.
The point where you're taking one of these fake cards that you are fully aware is fake and attempting to trade with it or sell it as if it were real,
mm-hmm.
there is a special place in hell for you with sharp things.
Okay.
But I actually don't see a problem with just using professional quality proxies for playing casually.
Provided they're appropriately marked as such.
Exactly.
Do you think this spells death for the game?
No. Not really. I mean, Magic Online is not affected at all. Magic Online is a huge percentage of...
I don't know if it is anymore.
Income. Also, no one's printing up fake booster packs.
Sure, so you can't steal limited.
Exactly, and people are still going to be opening packs. I mean, a lot of the I would consider us part of, like, maybe 20% of Magic players who, you know, are active in the online community and play competitively and this kind of thing. I'd imagine about 80% of Magic players are just guys who have a few cards, who buy some packs occasionally, who play on the kitchen table.
Something that highlighted that was when they had the whole thing about, the big conversation about women in Magic.
Yeah.
Where they talked about limited resources, I want to say Gaby. I don't know if she's called Gaby or Gabby. I don't watch it. I think it's Gabby wrote that article for Channel Fireball, and Maro came out and said that 40% of Magic players are women, which, in my experience, is just not even a little bit close to true.
But that's because the Magic players we interact with are the ones who are active in the online communities or turning up at the LGS for FNMs, and too many acronyms in that sentence mm-hmm. altogether. And, you know, playing in the PPTQs and PTQs.
But it's difficult to measure, like, who got some magic cards from their uncle and plays in the kitchen table now.
Exactly. And I'd be interested to know where Mark Rosewater got those numbers, because...
It was 40%, wasn't it?
It was something along those lines, but like you say, it's difficult to measure that.
Sure.
I'd be interested to know how they measured that. Yeah, like, the people who were likely to answer surveys about...
Your selection bias, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But you think the vast majority of players are casual...
Which is true,
I think almost objectively true.
Yeah.
And that proxies give them an opportunity to play with cards that they don't want to invest on.
Exactly. Also, a lot of these proxies, I'm calling them proxies to make myself feel a bit better. I don't own any of these cards, but I hope I don't.
Yeah, right?
I would have no way of knowing if I owned any of these cards, because the latest batch are pretty much only distinguishable from the real thing by slight variations in the color. Mm-hmm. of the card, and that's not really my strong suit.
No, you are, for most intents and purposes, colorblind.
Yeah. The thing about these is that a lot of them are, like you're saying, high-value reserve list cards, the reserve list bit being the important bit.
Because Wizards won't print them anymore.
Exactly. And it's with the dual lands in particular, that kind of puts an expiration date on Eternal Formats. Not an imminent one.
But, but these cards get put in the washing machine, or lost, like your Commander deck,
and not even that, just like... What I think the percentage of cards that are destroyed or lost is quite small.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is that like the formats just can't grow after a certain point
because the cards become too expensive.
Yeah, and there's only a certain amount of them, and eventually they will have been distributed among the people who play Legacy,
mm-hmm.
and then those will be the people who play Legacy,
and that's it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it's a topic for conversation. Like I don't know if. People printing fake cards is the answer to the problem,
mm-hmm.
or if like they just say, okay, you can play proxies in Legacy tournaments.
That devalues a lot of mm-hmm. things people already bought into.
I mean, that was the argument with the reserve list. We don't want to reprint, but they reprint cards like Cryptic Command, mm-hmm. and no one freaks out because everyone's delighted that they can play with Cryptic Commands, and the people who are collecting Cryptic Commands still have their Cryptic Commands.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and they're always going to be worth more than the newer ones.
I'm sometimes with the
best. Sure.
But yeah, until something dramatic happens with the reserve list, I think these fake cards are going to continue to be a problem.
The other thing that came out, which we talked about a little bit last time, mm-hmm. was the cheating at the Pro Tour.
We talked about Pat Chapin mostly, and that was not cheating.
That was not cheating.
Made very clear last time. He did not cheat. He made a mistake.
You know who did cheat?
Who?
Valdivia and Stephen Speck,
mm.
and they got appropriate bannings. Valdivia, for those of you who don't know, is the guy who picked up
There was a board wipe, and as he scooped up his cards to put in the bin, he picked up a Temple of
Silence. I think he flipped it over so it was face down, and then he picked it up and put it into his hand
so that he could reuse it for the scry
on camera.
Yeah, which is stupid,
right? But that is a cheat of opportunity. That's what that's called. Is you see a window where you could cheat to gain advantage, mm. and you do that. And he has received a...
6-month ban?
I think it's 3 months.
Was it 3 months?
I have written here 3 months.
Okay, well, let's go with 3 months then.
Ban from competitive Magic events for that.
Mm.
The other cheat, which is much more insidious...
I don't know about insidious, but it's definitely more blatant.
Is Stephen Speck's cheat, who was playing Amulet Plume.
Which, for those of you who don't know, is a combo deck that's very, very... it's a modern combo deck.
Well, he wasn't playing it at the PTS, I suppose, was he?
Was this not Pro Tour? No, this was Pro Tour Dragons.
So he was one of the people who had popularized Amulet Plume anyway. Yeah. And what he was doing was he would palm 7 cards into his hand and then present a 53-card deck to his opponent to cut. And then when they returned it, he would place his perfect 7 on it and draw a perfect 7-card hand.
Which is pretty nice if you're playing a very fragile but powerful combo deck.
Like Amulet Plume.
Yeah, but this was just standard.
I'm pretty sure he was banned at Proto Dragons attack here.
I think you're right.
Yes, he was DQ'd at Proto Dragons for the same thing.
That was seamless.
Seamless, right? So it's difficult to say if he cheated at the GPs where he did well with Amulet Plume.
But he was a big advocate of the deck and talking about how he always had these consistent...
wins and how he's finally getting there and stuff. And that's pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
Now, he received a 3-year ban.
Yeah.
And some people on Reddit are angry about that.
Angry that it received a 3-year ban?
As opposed to a lifelong ban.
Right.
They don't... Wizards currently, I don't think, gives out lifelong bans for games.
I mean...
For, game rules...
Yeah.
...problems.
It's more for...
illegal things, like assault or forgery or theft.
Mm.
But I don't think they can give them out for anything you do within the game. But do you think 3 years is an appropriately long time, or are we going to get another Alex Bertaccini, where he's going to come back and just cheat again?
I mean,
I
don't think it's a good idea to not give people a second chance.
That's what I should say. No disrespect to Steven Speck. I'm sure he's a great guy. But he cheated, and that sucks. And maybe he regrets it, and maybe...
Okay, you know what? When you say no disrespect to him, I'm sure he's a great guy. I don't. I'm not sure he's a great guy. I think he cheated repeatedly in high-level Magic tournaments and...
Stealing thousands of dollars.
Stole money from people for, you know...
Yeah... Yeah, that's...
Like, I'm not going to say he's a great guy. I'm not going to not disrespect him. I am going to disrespect him because he cheated, and that's not cool.
Alright, that's fair enough. But do you think he should be banned for longer than 3 years? Or, like, what's the appropriate... I know this isn't your decision to make, obviously. Absolutely. But what do you think would be an appropriate amount of time for, like, a pre-mediated...
Pre-meditated?
Pre-omed. Did I say mediated?
Yeah.
Okay, decided on
by they'd already talked it out, and everything was cool. The
judge said it was fine, yeah. Well, no. For a premeditated cheat. For a pre-planned cheat.
Yeah. I think 3 years is pretty appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty severe punishment. Like, if Magic is a big part of your life, like, this guy's playing on the Pro Tour, he obviously plays a lot of competitive Magic, and, it's, you know, if you're playing on the Pro Tour, it's some percentage of your income.
Well, only if you get appearance fees.
Yeah.
If you're in the Hall of Fame or whatever.
Or
Platinum.
Or Platinum. Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, he's big in the world of Magic at the very least. Magic is a large part of his life, and 3 years now that's been taken away from him.
Well, he can still play Magic Online,
which is weird.
Well, how are they going to enforce that?
I suppose. But do I think it should be longer? No. Do I think it should be lifetime? Absolutely not.
Okay.
I think people should be given extra chances.
Do you think if he gets another, if someone, let's pull Steven out of this for now, do you think if someone gets two bannings for deliberate premeditated
cheating? I don't think there's ever a point where you ban someone for life. I think increasing the length of the ban based on previous, like if it's a repeated offense, I think increasing the length of the ban totally makes sense.
There are people who are banned for 800 years or whatever, but I think it's for assault and theft, that kind of stuff.
And if they live to 835, then go ahead and let them play Magic with the new holographic cards.
Like in Yu-Gi-Oh?
Yeah.
Do you have anything else on top of that? Okay, so there was a question on Reddit.
Yeah.
It was on
Tumblr.
There was a question on Tumblr to Mark Rosewater asking if there could ever be a mythic vanilla creature.
We've come close. We've had vanilla legendary creature.
Isamaru,
Hand of Kanda.
And Mark Rosewater replied saying, he's designed one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if it'll get to print.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is an appropriately designed mythic vanilla creature?
I had a think about this, right? I think it's really difficult to do that because mythics are supposed to be these big splashy effects that do something unique and, you know, are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And vanilla creatures tend to belong at common.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've had mythics that are basically vanilla creatures. Like, Pelucranus is a 4-mana 5/5, and he has the monstrous ability, but, I mean, it's a good monstrous ability, but I think he'd still probably see play as a 4-mana 5/5.
Just as a beefer.
Mm.
So what do you think... But if he didn't have that and he wasn't a legendary...
He wouldn't be as powerful, obviously.
Now, do you think something like just a green, green, green 5/5?
Green, green, green 5/5 was the thing. Like, we've had Leatherback Baeloth at Uncommon, which was a green, green, green 4/5.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say you could probably go bigger than that. Green is renowned for its undercross.
Green would be the color to do that. Yeah. Or, like you mentioned...
I would have said like a single red 3/1 would probably be close to a mythic.
But that's like it can't have haste.
No.
So it's just worse than like Goblin Guide.
I'd say it's still worse than Goblin Guide, but a single red 3/1 would see it to the play in Standard.
No, that's definitely not bad. But it's so difficult when a big part of what makes cards feel mythic is that they're complicated, not necessarily complicated, but slightly more
splashy.
Complex,
yeah.
And flashy, and like nice and like interesting.
Mm.
And by definition, vanilla creatures can't be any of those things.
Yeah.
So
what about single white 0/8? That'd be a mythic.
Nah, that'd be... I'd put that a common.
Well, we have, like, Yoke Docks as...
0/4.
0/4.
And, like, Kraken Hatching and stuff. It would have to be something like a single red 3/1 or, like, a green, green, green 5/6 or 5/5 or something.
Lines, yeah.
The balance is...
I think it'd be difficult to see it work.
Yeah, do you think the one that Mark designed will get to print?
Probably, I mean...
I don't think so. He obviously fucking knows better than I do.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's something we're not thinking of. Maybe there's a very cool...
Some people are saying that they want a Vanilla Matters set.
Like?
Characters with no abilities gains trample.
Okay.
Can the rules check for that?
If it, yeah, you can. Yeah, there's a card that gives all your creatures.
I suppose can, if
plus it, 2/2. Or
I suppose if a creature with flying can gain this, then you can do it like that. But that seems like a terrible set.
Yeah, I think that's
that seems really boring.
I wouldn't enjoy that too much.
But I think a mythic vanilla creature would be interesting just to see.
Yeah, I don't think you need to do vanilla matters because vanilla is like your bread and butter, and you don't want
to have only bread and butter for dinner.
Exactly.
Right. Speaking of design, well, kind of on that tangent.
Oh, look, the next thing on the list.
Yeah, it's almost like I put them in an order. What do you think the worst designed card?
This is just something you came up with.
I just wanted to talk about it because I saw
the worst designed card or the worst card.
Not the worst card, not the least powerful card or the most annoying card, or not even like the most busted card.
Mm-hmm.
But like the one that just you look at it and you're like, why? Why did this happen?
Why does this exist?
How did this get to print?
Yeah. The one that always springs to mind is Chains of Mephistopheles.
Chains of Mephistopheles is more complicated than, like, War and Peace.
And most of these exams I'm studying for.
Yeah, right?
If I had an exam on Chains of Mephistopheles, I wouldn't be here right now. I would be studying.
Yeah.
As it is, I'm just doing electrical engineering. Chains of Mephistopheles, I don't even know what it does. I would tell you what it does, I don't know.
I'll put up a picture, but there's no point.
Yeah. I have no idea what the card does. Or why it exists. Apparently it's quite good.
Really?
Yeah.
I never finished reading it.
Yeah, I just... other popular answers are cards like Hornet Sting.
Just because it breaks the color pie so much.
A bit too much. And it's like, sure, you can justify it for flavor reasons, because bees are green. No, they're not. They're yellow.
You shouldn't know that.
That's true. Maybe they are green.
For all you know. But Mark Rosewater is very vocal about how much he hates that.
And Hornet Queen. Weird for a green
bunch
card.
Of flying death touchers.
Hornet Queen always seemed like a black card to me.
Really? Why?
I mean, lots of flying death touchers.
That's pretty horny, yeah. I guess that's pretty black. The one that jumps to my mind, just for fun, funniness, is Indestructible Aura.
Indestructible Aura, which I have that card. I own that card.
Which is not an aura.
Nor does it mention the word indestructible.
Grant indestructibility or anything.
Yeah.
And has, and I know you're going to disagree with me on this, some of the worst art I've ever seen in my entire life.
If by worst art you mean most metal.
Most metal. It's got a bird shooting flames or something out of one hand.
Like rock pose hands, and like crossed arms.
Ice out of the other one or something. And it's designed by some guy called something Pool, because his name's in big
Mark
dumb...
Mark Pool.
It's in big dumb block letters in the corner of the art.
Yeah.
And it's just awful. And it baffles my mind that someone looked at that and went, yep. Get it out the door.
Oh, I love that art.
Now, at the time, auras weren't called auras, I don't think.
They were called enchant creatures.
So it's not quite...
That's for, and the mechanic indestructible also did not exist.
Yeah, so it's not quite... But looking back on it now, it just makes you think, like, look at what we've come.
Yeah, what are we doing?
Where, like, what we used to be.
Yeah.
The other one that it tops a lot of these lists is Sorrow's Path.
Sorrow's Path is often heralded as the worst power level-wise card.
Other contenders are like Scornful Egotist and like One with Nothing and stuff like that.
But Sorrow's Path is particularly beautiful. It's a land.
Yep.
To begin with, it doesn't tap for mana.
No, sir.
Right. It has an activated ability where you tap it to exchange two blocking... You basically, two creatures are blocking, you swap what they're blocking.
Except the new blocking configuration can't be an illegal one.
Yeah, so you can't make a
non-flyer a flyer.
Yeah, this kind of thing. Or, make something that can't be... Yeah, any blocking restrictions can't be broken by it. And then, it has a triggered ability, which triggers whenever it becomes tapped, which deals 2 damage to you and all your creatures.
Yep. It's pretty great, huh?
It's fantastic.
It's pretty good now, time.
It would be funny as well, because, it's a triggered ability when it becomes tapped. If it was just part of the ability...
That would make more sense.
That would make a lot more sense. But, then you could just not use the thing. It could just be a dead card.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an active liability. People can tap your lands for you and deal 2 damage to all your creatures. I saw a decklist once that won by playing a Sorrow's Path, donating it to the opponent, and Rashad importing it for the rest of the game.
For 10 times.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was so funny.
I don't think Sorrow's Path is... it's a bad card.
It's... Razor Boomerang, One with Nothing. These cards are, similarly...
They're bad cards, but I don't think it's too bad in design. If anyone has
that ability that doesn't need a drawback, let alone a drawback that terrible.
Or to exist.
Yes.
It just doesn't need to happen. No.
It's like that kind of thing on board isn't that good. Like if it was an instant that drew you a card and did that, I might play that.
That's just not worth it though. So, and check how long we've been going for. We can wrap up. We have a question though. So finally, we have a fan question.
This is the in response segment. Remember we named it?
We did name it. Yeah. In response to the question from the fan that asked it. It's the official theme song. So this is from Redblade. In the YouTube comments of our last video. If you want to leave us a question for next week, please do that in the comments below and we'll answer it. Maybe.
We'll pick one.
Question. Would you ever pay a subscription fee for unlimited Phantom Drafts or Sealed on MTGO? How much would you pay? My friend and I played together at my place, but he refused to play by himself because he hates the $15 a draft.
Redblade. So this is probably in relation to the fact that last week we talked about me never playing Magic Online except to record videos anymore.
But that wasn't so much a monetary thing. That was more of a you hate...
Well, I mean, I'm not going to spend my money to play something.
Have a bad time. Yeah,
exactly. If it was free, I might play it. I don't know. But, like, a subscription model, you know, $15, say, a month, and you play as much Phantom. So there's no stakes anymore.
I pointed that out, which is, like, if you ever played on Smirkatures, and you could do drafts on there.
Yeah, you need to go through some other... You need to jump through some hoops, but it's doable.
And you'd do your draft, and then you'd sit down to play round one, and you'd play round one, and then you'd go back into the room, and you'd be like, hey, anybody want to play round two? And the answer was no, never. That is not an appropriate Magic experience.
No.
And if you have a subscription fee for all these Phantom Drafts with no prizes, nobody's going to play them out. Nobody's going to stick around to play. And then you just have a really awful experience... Because you end up like, oh, I guess I don't get to finish my draft. And because I got mana screwed and get in round one, I didn't get to see what my deck could do. Now, guess I'll try again.
If I could pay $15, $20 a month and basically have Magic Online play like Smirkatures, where I could build whatever deck I want and play it against other people who are doing the same thing.
Constructed-wise, you're getting somewhere, I think.
Would do that.
You could have a Phantom collection that you're leasing for Magic Online for $20 a month to play Constructed with. That's a little more appealing. But they'd have to...
I mean, at that point, you might as well follow a Hearthstone model where the cards can't be resold and there's no value on them.
They'd have to abolish their market.
You earn cards
through
playing, you know, this kind of thing.
And that might be the direction that they're going in with the
with
new Duel's
Origins,
We don't know that yet. But that certainly seems to be
the path they're heading down.
And it wouldn't be... It's a wise path.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, it's been demonstrated that it works.
Sure.
With Hearthstone being incredibly successful very, very quickly.
Now, would I pay $20 a month or $15 a month or whatever for unlimited, say, cube drafts? If I could be guaranteed an authentic experience,
sure. But you just can't.
I don't think you can, no. So, to answer your question, Redblade,
like even
I don't think so.
Cube drafts that fire now...
People quit after everyone all the time.
Exactly, which is bizarre, because they're pack per win. I was going to say Swiss, but they're pack per win.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Swiss ones aren't. They're Phantom points.
Yes, but what do they call those? If they've changed that from Swiss to pack per win, what do they call the Phantom... Swiss.
Because it goes 2 points, 6 points, 2 points, 8 points, 16 points, 24 points. So it's 8 points per win, except for you also get two at the start anyway.
Yep.
It doesn't really fit on the type line.
Can we just call it Swiss?
We just call it Swiss. Yeah, but I don't think that model would necessarily work. Now, I think that's definitely the right direction to go, but you'd have to abolish the secondary market, give cards all no value.
At that point, you might as well be marketing a new game.
You might as well be phasing it.
You might as well be doing Duel's Origins.
Which might be where that's going.
Yeah.
Would you be upset if Magic Online got phased out in favor of Duel's Origins?
I mean, I don't play Magic Online, so no, not in a huge way.
Yeah. I would. I like winning monetarily valuable things.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I win a slightly above an average amount of games.
Sure.
So that's nice.
So you're EV plus.
I'm EV plus.
Round's starting.
Oh, shit.
I guess we're going to go... leave a
question
and
your
all that good
worst
stuff.
Design cards, and what do you think about bannings?
And a commander for Dennis to play.
Yes, brilliant.
I mean, we'll probably end up putting this on iTunes in some form in the future, but don't rush us because it's hard.
It's really difficult. I don't know how to do that.
And, yeah, I mean...
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.